We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome the program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you? What's going on, man?
Oh, man. Book launch. Our movie is going to be screening in film festivals in September. Really excited.
All right. And so I'm excited to welcome the program actor, director, and producer Andrew Burton. He's going to talk about All the Lord's Men and more. Andrew, thanks for stopping. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good, Neil. How are you?
Good, good, good. So first question for you. Did you always want to be an actor, a director, and producer growing up? And where did you grow up? Yeah.
I grew up in Portland, Oregon. I think the first thing I kind of wanted to do was probably write. I wrote, you know, novels, a lot of screenplays. But then I kind of got into acting in college. I did like a lot of off-Broadway kind of stuff, some acting classes. And, you know, the directing thing, that just kind of happened as soon as I left school. And I kind of started making my first short films and just kind of got the hang of it by doing it. And then I was making features, you know, a couple years later. So yes, I think I've always been into the arts, you know, writing, acting, directing. Are they all supposed to go together in one package? I think so, at least in my case. I do like doing all of them. And I think it's kind of cool to kind of be able to package a story, you know, that specifically, because I think, you know, as a certain person who does a few different crafts, I think you can craft things a little bit more precisely. Maybe you can, you know, tell stories a little bit differently than if you had to explain what this in a screenplay means to a director you bring in. So I think having that type of, I guess, vertically integrated control as one person is kind of something I actually like. Yeah.
Andrew, I mean, compared to us old guys, you look so young. How old are you? And how did you achieve all of this stuff so soon? I mean, 20, 30 years ago in Hollywood, guys your age would never be in the position you're in.
Well, I mean, I think I'm 27. I think Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah, he's old.
I think Orson Welles quite a bit by the time he was my age. I don't know the exact ages.
He's the exception, though.
He's the exception. Okay. I think in my case, it's just been kind of like running directly into the fire. Not that there's ever been a fire, but it's been about doing things. I pretty much spend all my time working. So it's been all since I got to LA right after school. It's just been about, you know, finding people to collaborate with, people who want to work on these films with me, kind of figuring out the whole business side of things, which I think is obviously everything, because, you know, these things just live in drawers if you don't like have some type of brain to do things with them. So yeah, it's just been doing it and running and doing it more, and I'm still doing it. So it's just doing it. Yeah.
See, Neil, he said the magic word, work ethic. That's what it is. Guys your age don't have that work ethic. Where'd you get it from?
Okay. I don't know. I've always had a work
ethic. Born that way.
Growing up in Portland, did it have to, because of the mindset, have that work ethic in survival, or what would you say?
I don't know if it was like, so I think the first kind of thing that occupied a lot of my life was ski racing. And I probably got some kind of work ethic from that. You know, I ski like 3/4 of the year, kind of like around the world, like training with sort of rather strict coaches. So I think it is just kind of the repetition of athletics, which I guess has informed sort of what I'm trying to do artistically. But like, yeah, I don't even look at it as just art, because you do think of art and you, I mean, I don't know if that's really a compatible word, you know, in Hollywood, you have to really combine art with business and a work ethic. So I think athletics seem like a really good kind of segue to filmmaking in my case. I think that in school and kind of just being like a boring kind of studious person has been something which has served me well, you know.
Yeah.
Well, don't break any bones skiing that much.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so when you said, you know, got involved in acting, directing, and filmmaking, all that stuff, what age were you when you first started?
So I think I started writing kind of like in a way where I thought, okay, I'm a writer, in like 7th grade. So, you know, kind of early, just for like prose and kind of novel writing. I was reading Sid Field's screenplay in 6th grade, I think. And just, I read it 2 or 3 times, and then I started writing screenplays, which are, I look at them fondly, and they're probably fine. But I mean, I think objectively, they might be trash. I don't know. But, you know, I've been writing. It was writing. And then what was the question?
So when is so kind of when the acting, directing and producing starts? So writing in seventh grade. Then yeah. When did that finally start to become a profession for you and all that stuff? How old were you?
Yeah, it started to kind of become a professional thing when I was like, 23, maybe?
Okay. So right after I left. So skiing and then that.
And then that, basically, yeah. But it was always kind of this, you know, I think it started in my head, at least firmly, kind of in college. I would, you know, in college, I would kind of commute between like New Hampshire and New York City quite a bit just to kind of meet people in the film industry and kind of just like go to various kind of off Broadway theater productions and kind of see how that works, you know, from a directing angle, from an acting angle and everything. So I think even in college, I was already, my heart was kind of like in the city, so to speak. Not that art has to live in New York City or any type of city, but I think just kind of, I always kind of wanted to just kind of leapfrog into some type of professional setting instead of just kind of leaving all my artistic kind of contributions on some type of student stage, you know? So yeah, my head's just always been at it since as early as I can really remember. I just started doing it and, you know, you try to build momentum, you do it every day and momentum eventually builds. And that's just kind of what I'm still doing right now. Just kind of building that momentum and turning my kind of production company into something larger that hopefully, you know, people will kind of know about soon-ish, you know, but you just got to keep working. Yeah.
No, that's what we always like to talk about. But that's that entrepreneurial mindset. That means when you're starting this young, it's going to be really big for you. And Dave, wouldn't you agree? It's just all about work ethic, and it's about having goals in mind and going after them.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, what was the film industry like in Portland versus LA? I mean, I'm sure there was a culture shock coming down here. Did you start the production company up there or down here?
No, I started all that down here. I don't know anything about the film industry in Portland, to be honest with you.
Does it even exist?
I don't know. It probably doesn't. For me, the Portland film industry is like, I've never even thought about it. I don't know. Maybe it's cool. I don't know. That said, I do want to film something in Portland or in Oregon very soon because I think it looks very cool on film. But I don't know about the Portland film industry. For me, it was basically college, then kind of intermingling with kind of a scene in New York City. And then right after college, the day I graduated, straight to LA. So it's just pretty much just been LA. It's kind of just been like where I've been getting my feet wet and walking into these fires I keep mentioning. So it's been LA. And how's it been? It's been cool.
Give us a story of just biting that bullet and going to LA. You know what I mean?
And by the way, you're going to have to give up skiing and learn how to surf. Since you're here,
I've never surfed. I've offers to learn to surf,
but so skiing that would work. No, I don't know. He's thinking of a sport that would work. What would skiing? What would
are you a snowboarder or not?
Not a snowboarder. You know, skiing. I haven't done it in a while, but obviously there's mountains close to LA, like Mammoth. I've never even.
Yeah. When the business blows up even more, then that's when you go skiing. All right. Yeah, so tell me, taking the leap of faith to move to LA. Tell us some of that story, you know, because that's what people need to see is if you want to be successful in your career, if you want to do things the right way, you have to decide I'm all in. I'm not half in. I'm not a quarter in. I'm all in. Kind of.
Mortgage the farm.
For me, yes. So this leap of faith. I want to say I've been willfully blind to many things because I did literally graduate and then a day later I was finding my first place in LA. Okay. And I think this has a lot to do with a willful kind of ignorance that things would just kind of work out. So I don't recall a moment where I was like shivering with fright about this whole type of new life I was embarking on, which I guess has become my life, I'm realizing now. It just happened because I just kept doing things. You know, I think one of the hardest things at first was probably just that first short film, because it is a little bit awkward to kind of be like nobody and start kind of auditioning actors, and you bring this like a little camera crew together and you rent out like a location to film the thing in. And I think for me, it was just a lot of just blatant awkwardness. Like, why are we filming a film with this guy? Who is he? Is this thing even good? Because even now, like, people don't know if a film is going to be good, like, when you're on set, because it's such a different kind of arduous, very manual thing when you're on set. It's even like the big directors, I think it's hard because if you have like no kind of body of work out there, which is me right now, that people kind of can reference, they really don't assume the best when they're on set with you. They think that, you know, you're a great guy, this is fun, hopefully, but they don't think this is going to turn into anything. So that's just awkward, just trying to keep that kind of enthusiasm on a set with people who really are with you, kind of just flying blind into not only careers, hopefully, but also what the story even could be. So it's a lot of just kind of embracing awkwardness, which I've always been fine with, just because I think I've always just felt awkward in a very kind of just awkward way. You know what I'm saying? So it's just been being okay with feeling weird and awkward, because filmmaking is weird and awkward, especially at first.
Sure. It seems like everybody's making a film these days. I mean, they're making a film about my life, so go figure. What was your first short about?
My first short was called Exchange Students. It was filmed at Pacific Palisades High School here in LA. It was about a group of kind of international students who are stuck in a classroom and they can't leave, and they just kind of lament about their fates to each other, and they just talk. It's kind of about nothing in a Seinfeld-y kind of sitcom sense. I've always kind of prized just kind of witty dialogue and BOMOs over, like, you know, like action movie kind of plots, you know? Yeah. And so it was set in one room, and that's very much for budgetary reasons, because it's way cheaper to film in one room. And also,
what was the reason why they couldn't leave?
So I never really explained that, but I think it was because there was an apocalypse outside. Oh. I think that's always like
unnecessary details.
Unnecessary details. I think that's always a good reason to keep people in one location. Yeah, it's just to say the world has ended outside.
That's interesting. You know? And did you go to film festivals? Did it win any awards? I mean,
that one just played for Friends, because it was just a way to kind of get my feet wet and see what was up with filming, and I think it's okay. And maybe one of these days I'll release it like on some type of bonus feature.
So based on that, when you first made a film, finally a feature, how hard is it to find the actors? Explain that process and the funding of funding the film too. There's two different things. People now could be an independent film maker and act and not have to go audition other places if they can find the right investors, find the right actors, and have a successful film. That's the change in this business than maybe 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, I think it's way easier these days to take control of the career that you want. Finding actors is almost, well, I'm going to say it's almost easy, because there are so many talented actors in the world, and not just LA, but, you know, last year I filmed 4 feature films. You know, I filmed all over the world. I filmed in Miami, Texas, New York, LA, and Germany. This was all kind of during COVID. So, you know, we had a lot of other challenges to deal with. Everyone stayed healthy and safe, luckily. But what I found kind of making that was that there's like really cool people all over the world. And it's like almost disturbingly mind-boggling that all these good actors are out there just kind of ready to work on these films. And they're cool people who can do amazing things with, you know, line delivery and look cool on screen, all these things. And they're everywhere. So for me, yeah, finding actors has been just a fun thing to do, see what's out there, see what different cultures offer, what these different countries' kind of film industries even look like. Like, I've been trying to kind of be international as much as I can at my small scale from day one. You know, I loved filming in Germany. That was cool. Filming with like Europeans. And I plan to do it again. So yeah, I mean, I just think there's like a ton of opportunity out there for a lot of people who want to be involved with things. And then just kind of finding investors. I mean, you have to get out there and just meet people and hope you just find.
Yeah, that investor discussion, Dave, you're interested in that. You might make another film. How's that investor process work? How do you get people that want to invest in your film?
You just have to build a relation with someone who likes art, likes filmmaking, and present yourself as not a doofus, because nobody wants to invest in doofuses. I mean, it's like, I think talking to investors is not rocket science. These are just people who are generally cool people who want to see something cool on screen that they can point to and say, I helped get that made. So all you really want to do is just like kind of sell the visual of the film to them. Just be yourself with them, because again, everyone is just a person in this world. And I mean, it's just, you just got to get out there. It's a numbers thing. Just
how the heck do you find them? That's the question that so many filmmakers
you work with them, Neil, my filmmaker, you know, he's working, he has other jobs. He does great work. And you know, people, you meet people, this guy knows that guy. And you say, hey, I'm working on a project. Oh, really? What's it about? You know, hey, send me a rough clip. You know, it's just kind of a conversation. It's who you know.
It's a conversation, who you know, meet more people thing. I mean, just leveraging.
And everything comes together. Boom.
Any connections you might have from school or any other type of work you do.
If it's good, you know.
There's a lot of people on this planet. There's investors all over the country, all over the world. I mean,
there are people right now listening, Dave, that has that question. There are filmmakers right now that will tune in because they'll see the Neil Haley Show and all the different things and say, and either YouTube channel or decide to listen to it on the radio and say, I need that tip, or a podcast and say, I need that tip, because really, where do you find them? It's just networking. But then
it needs to be good work too, Neil. Able to take honest criticism.
You know,
of course you think it's great because you're prejudiced, but ask other people, hey, honest with me, you know, because nobody wants to tell you your film sucks, you know.
Good story. And as a production company, you go out and find those investors and network with other production people and all that. So here's my question. Let's talk about your film now, Andrew. Talk about your film. Let's talk about how that came being, and you're acting in it too, right?
Yeah. So it's called All the Lord's Men. It's a comedy film set in Los Angeles, California. It centers around two detectives, Jimmy, who I play, and Jerry, played by Noel Mirabal, a really good actor from Miami. They're kind of bozo detectives living in this cult trying to solve a murder.
An Inspector Clouseau kind of a...
It's more kind of Miami Vice.
Miami Vice, big fan of, yeah.
Oh, I love Miami Vice, yeah.
Okay, so that's funny. A millennial likes Miami Vice? What?
I don't know.
How the hell is that?
Cool looking. The music is amazing. I think
it's phenomenal.
The Michael Mann touch is...
My God, it's a great show. I dressed up in the Miami Vice deal. Okay. I had Don Johnson shirt. I had the slacks. I wore everything Miami Vice when it was popular. The ladies loved me as that age wearing that. I was in seventh or eighth grade wearing the Miami Vice style stuff. So Yeah. I'm 49. So it's interesting to hear that. Millennials are watching shows like that. Dave, were you a Miami Vice fan?
Yeah, who wasn't?
It's cool. It looks cool. Michael Mann has a touch that makes things look cool. There's like, it's not even full of substance. It doesn't need to be. It just looks cool. I even like his movie adaptation of Miami Vice, which a lot of people hate. So yeah, when I was writing this movie, I did have Miami Vice just playing on loop on my television. And that was pretty much what I was channeling. Just 1980s type of music and cop things. And then I wrote this thing, and I said the plot a second ago, but this is what I would call a deliberately plotless art film, which one would think would diminish a potential audience. But I don't think that needs to be the case, because there's really good music by a composer duo called Room 8. There's really good performances, and it's full of comedy, like Seinfeld is. Seinfeld is a show that you watch without caring about the plot, because you love the characters and you love the dialogue. So that's what I was trying to do with this movie. And it's just kind of these guys trying to figure out this kind of murder, which doesn't matter. And they just kind of talk about their lives, and they meet these people. There's this guy living in a cult. He's trying to write the new Bible. guy named Larry, played by Bill Castro Giovanni. He has a wife he doesn't like. Half an hour later in the movie, after meeting him and his wife, we see him having like intimate relations with the man who leads the cult, Dr. Buzner, played by Matt Fling. So it's just a strange little movie. It's kind of like Inherent Vice by Paul Thomas Anderson, or maybe a little bit of David Lynch is in there, you know, though I think that might be too easy a comparison. A little bit of Michael Mann, just because a lot of the use of the music.
I love it. I love your ability and your thought process at 27 to be able to do this and have your production company. Dave, I'm impressed by this guy. I really am by his just, your mind is amazing because you're taking and learning history of film and putting it all together into your own stuff. Seinfeld. He's the next generation, truly. And he's doing it, building it on his own production company. That's the smart way, Dave, because, right, am I correct? You might direct some other stuff that's not your production company, but you want to make your name doing it this way.
I want to make my name doing it this way.
It's the Desi Arnaz model, you know.
I don't know that person. Should I know that?
Lucy. I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy. Okay.
Ricky.
Did you see the one thing on Amazon about the story of I Love Lucy and stuff? Desi?
Oh,
yeah,
he had the largest production company ever, and he started the model of it, you know, and he did all these shows in the 70s. Google him.
Whoa, okay.
Learn something.
I should know these things.
No, you know most.
Too young.
No, but I do like having the control, and I like this kind of just vertical integration thing where it's just all in my wheelhouse. I think that's so important going forward. I think just the industry is going to embrace more and more just kind of like brands that can go direct to the consumer, you know? Yeah.
And there's a lot of old school that would disagree with everything you're doing. And so, you know,
totally, which is fun, I guess.
The old school's dead, Dave, but okay. So it's really,
they're still there, but they're
dying. It's a dying breed. Look at Netflix, how many subscribers they lost. They lost a million subscribers because they did not look at their customer. They did not go to the competition. They might end up,
success is the enemy.
Hey, but at least they had success. All right. So my take for you is, where do you see yourself, Andrew, in the next 10 years? In 10 years, where do you want to be?
I want to still be heading my production company, but I want to be able to partner with larger kind of well-known companies and studios to kind of just come together and make something a lot bigger than what I can currently do by myself with my small pool of whoever I know. So I just want to be bigger so that I can be a reputable place that other large companies who exist today would want to partner with. So I want to keep doing this, but at a much larger scale with just the best people in the world. And I just really want to just, you know, go to the top, because I think a top does exist and a lot of good movies come from a so-called top. And yeah, I just want to grow and keep growing.
I love hearing that. And you have to have the mindset and manifest that, and it will come. Dave, go with your last question for Andrew.
You're talking about the caregiving question?
Yes.
Yeah. So I was leading a normal life. I owned a gas station and now I'm a 4-time best-selling author. Became a caregiver 25 years ago. My wife had this headache, lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And, you know, we almost broke up, but we worked through it and she reinvented herself. And I became the caregiver's caregiver because I was making all the mistakes being a caregiver. And by the way, everyone is eventually going to become a caregiver. And just like me, you better learn how to do it or you're just going to be scratching your head and say, oh, you know. So I wrote this book about how to caregive. And I've been on 53 TV shows. I've been speaking all over the country. My question to you, Andrew, I know you're young, but has caregiving touched your young life yet? Grandparents, parents?
Yeah.
No. That would be a no.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Have you ever run into anything that you've had to care for somebody? That's another good question.
How old are your grandparents?
They're 70s.
Yeah, still doing well.
Still doing well. Yeah. Everyone's doing well. Yeah. You know, I think just everyone's trying to stay healthy and be happy. Caregiving, I think it's important. That's my contribution here.
That's fine with that. And go to caregiverdave.com. If you know of somebody Dave has a tremendous mission to help caregivers, because again, most of them get burned out and some die, as David said, 30% of them.
That's what the film is all about, that they're making about me, is the celebrity caregiver, because I'm going all over the world just talking about caregiving. And so we'll see what happens.
All right. And so the best place to find you now, Andrew, and the up and coming filmmaker to the next level. I see your mindset. You're going to do it and where can we watch the film, first of all, and then also find information.
Yes. Well, All the Lord's Men is currently out across the country in select theaters. And then August 15th, it will have a wide release on all major streaming platforms and on demand. So iTunes, Prime, Vudu, all these places. And yeah, if you want to know more about this film, about me, about my trilogy I filmed last year, coming out later this year, the Pan American Trilogy, about my next series of films, Chernobyl High, I'm filming early next year. You can go to burtonpictures.com. I take that back. It's burton.pictures or burtonpicturesentertainment.com. And on Instagram, I'm burtonpicturesentertainment. And that is pretty much just my page. And I think it's a good place to kind of enter my world.
Good.
Fantastic. We're looking forward to more stuff. And I that name Burton, get ready. Another name Burton.
No relation to Richard Burton, right?
No.
No, but get ready for this Burton. It's going to be big. I believe it. I appreciate you guys and take care. And thanks for coming on. You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show's Caregiver Dave. So every segment, and we'll be back in just a moment.